The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Thanks for Coming, Population Surge Driving States Metro Economies, North Carolina Economic Outlook. And the story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, North Carolina Economic Outlook, Welcome to Carolina, How the Population Surge Here Will Continue to Drive the State's Metro Economies Forward in 2023 and Beyond, written by Eric Spanberg. Recession is, in quotes, likely coming, but in North Carolina, something else is coming too, more people. The steady influx of newcomers makes economists bullish on both the state's long-term prospects as well as its ability to reduce the severity of an imminent slowdown. When asked to forecast North Carolina's financial fortunes in the year ahead, economists cited familiar challenges and uncertainties heard throughout the nation in recent months. Inflation, Federal Reserve rate increases, the supply chain, labor shortages, while invariably pointing to population growth as the state's not-so-secret weapon. National and international political uncertainties likely to affect the economy, include the continuing war in Ukraine and a looming congressional showdown over the federal debt ceiling. It's going to be a challenging economic year no matter where you are in the country, says Charlie Doherty, an economist at Wells Fargo & Company. We do expect the national economy to go into recession starting in the second half of 2023. Doherty believes there are signs some slowing has started in North Carolina, as in most of the nation, but the state is still better off economically than many others. North Carolina has consistently outperformed the national economy in growth in population, employment, and output for the past decade or more, Doherty says. Expect that to continue. Mike Walden, economics professor emeritus at NC State University, shares that sentiment, predicting that any decline in the North Carolina economy will be modest. Walden anticipates unemployment rates increasing to 5% to 6%, equal to an additional 50 to 75,000 job losses statewide by the end of 2023, up from the 12-month average of 3.6% last year. The downturn in urban centers, Charlotte, the Triangle, and the Triad, most notably, will be less, he says. Why? Rapid population growth, Walden says. Walden's latest economic report reflects how North Carolina has outperformed national norms, as he and Doherty note. Using third quarter data from 2022 versus 2021, fourth quarter figures won't be available until March, federal statistics show the national economy grew 1.9%. North Carolina's grew 3.2%. It was the same story in annual job growth, 3.3% U.S., 4.3% North Carolina, wages, 4.8% and 5.4% respectively, and employment. 230,000 more people working here, a 5% gain versus 1% nationally. Walden expects fourth quarter 2022 results to show state GDP between $565 and $570 billion. Annual GDP in North Carolina was $513 billion in the pre-COVID year of 2019, slipped to $507 billion in 2020, and grew to $545 billion in 2021, the last full-year figure available. Mark Vittner, chief economist at Charlotte-based Piedmont Crescent Capital, forecasts GDP for 2022 will finish at $560 billion. This year, he sees that figure rising in North Carolina by 0.8%, to $564 billion, a healthier pace than his U.S. forecast for a GDP gain of 0.2% in 2023. North Carolina's economy should hold up relatively well compared to the nation as a whole, he says. Adding workers is key. Population growth has always been important for economic vitality, but it may be even more so now. John Connaughton, professor of financial economics at UNC Charlotte, prefaces his remarks about current conditions by first noting the persistent shortage of workers across the country isn't about the effects of COVID-19 or Federal Reserve policy or people not wanting to work. It's about a much larger baby boom generation retiring, while much smaller cohorts replace them. Laura Dawson Ulrich, senior regional economist at the Charlotte branch of the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond, notes that 24 of the 50 states had higher death rates than birth rates in 2022, according to U.S. Census figures. North Carolina is among the 26 that had more births, 122,179, compared with 115,720 deaths, a circumstance that is further bolstered by continuing migration, 99,796 people last year from other states. Both Charlotte and Raleigh are pretty well positioned, she adds, referring to population gains. With growth comes a growing tax base. It comes with the ability to attract more businesses because the number one thing businesses are interested in is where are we going to get the workers to do the work we want to do? According to U.S. Census data, North Carolina's population growth last year was 1.3%, triple the national average of 0.4%. In 2021, the respective figures were 1.1% and 0.2%. During the past 5 years, North Carolina's rate of growth has been double or more the national average every year, except the pandemic year of 2020. Ulrich says there are many areas of the Carolinas besides three metro areas as standouts: Charlotte, the Triangle, and Charleston. While analysts and economists express optimism about weathering the current environment and making gains soon afterward, John Quinterno, a labor market expert and visiting professor of the practice at Duke University Sanford School of Public Policy, offers a pointed reminder of the perils and costs of even a modest rise in unemployment. Quinterno notes the enhanced federal safety net approved during the early parts of the pandemic, shelter, food, child care, and increased unemployment have largely ended. In North Carolina, he says, that means anyone who loses their job will be left with the state's miserly unemployment assistance. A recession is always mild when your neighbor loses their job, Quinterno says. I think we're too glib about this. Beyond the destruction job loss causes people and their families, he adds, there are broader lasting impacts because of atrophied skills and disruption to businesses because of turnover and lost production. North Carolina businesses and industries are at risk because of expected increases in unemployment this year, he says. Imperfect predictions. Economics and economists and their forecasts come with caveats and exceptions. Keep in mind that the delineation of a recession is fuzzy in itself. Often, but not always, consider two consecutive quarters of negative gross domestic product, or GDP, the total value of all goods and services. The National Bureau of Economic Research, the nonpartisan organization that determines when the nation is or isn't in a recession, defines a recession as a significant decline in economic activity that is spread across the economy and that lasts more than a few months. Vintner, the Charlotte economist, says that similarly, mild recession is open to debate. The two most recent recessions at the start of COVID from February to April 2020 and the Great Recession of 2007 to 2009 brought the harshest blows of any downturn since World War II, Vintner found. In the former, GDP declined 9.6%. In the latter, 4%. Ulrich of Charlotte's Fed branch was part of a chorus of analysts who expressed optimism over recent drops in inflation from the 40-year peak of 9% last summer. Still, she and others say it remains above 6%, well above the Fed's target of 2%. A milder, shorter recession could look like the 1990 to 91 one, when GDP declined 1.4% during an 8-month downturn, Vintner notes. He cautions that the average recession lasts 11 months and a so-called rolling recession, which he sees as a possibility, could drag out the pain if various sectors dip in and out of decline rather than at the same time. In North Carolina, Vintner, too, sees continuing population gains as a balm that will ease the effects of the recession and sustain long-term growth trends, but he adds that doesn't mean avoiding setbacks altogether. We're seeing real weakness in the technology sector. We're seeing real weakness in single-family housing. We've seen a real turn in apartment demand, Vintner says. We're likely to see a substantial slowing, and we also have a lot of supply coming on in Raleigh and Charlotte. According to industry tracker RealPage Incorporated, as of January 2023, Charlotte and Raleigh ranked among the top 10 U.S. cities for apartments under construction, Charlotte is second with 32,476 units being built, equal to a 15.1% increase in inventory. Raleigh-Durham, as RealPage defines the area, is fourth with 24,439 units underway, or a gain of 13.6%. Care to guess what the caveat is? The slip, if there is one, won't last long, and slowing is in the eye of the beholder. Median rent for Charlotte and Raleigh is just under $1,500 per month, according to Apartment List. Growth is slowing. Rents jumped 20.5% in Raleigh and 19% in Charlotte in 2021 versus the national average of 17.6%, but still above average. In 2022, Raleigh 5.2% and Charlotte 6%, rents grew faster than the U.S. at 4%. Home prices could fall. Vintner sees a correction coming in home prices this year, including Charlotte and Raleigh. He estimated Charlotte, for example, is due for a 15% drop, including a roughly 3% dip that's already occurred in recent months. He sees a similar scenario in the Raleigh area. Again, there are nuances within the trends and forecasts. Zillow Group Incorporated chose Charlotte as its hottest housing market for 2023, based on factors including home value appreciation, listing days per home, and projected changes in ownership. According to UNC Charlotte's Childress Klein Center for Real Estate's most recent housing report released last fall, median home prices grew from $273,500 in January 2020 to $420,000 in September 2022. Zillow data analyzed by the Triad Business Journal showed that homes in Greensboro and Winston-Salem sold for 50% more in 2022 than in 2020. That translates to average sales of $245,000 and $237,000, respectively. Home prices in the Raleigh area reached a record $422,000 in 2022 before dipping to $395,000 in the fall and beginning to climb again by year end with a median price of $400,000, Triangle Business Journal reported. In Wake County, the median is $470,000. Prices going up in Charlotte and the Triangle, people will start considering the Triad more, says David Berger, an economics professor at Duke University. Berger and other economists say the Triad may feel more of a recession pinch than its larger urban counterparts because that part of the state has a larger manufacturing base. At the same time, they see Greensboro, Winston-Salem, and High Point making strides with recent high-profile wins, including the imminent arrival of a $500 million jet manufacturing hub for Boom Supersonic, and Toyota Motor Corporation's $3.8 billion electric vehicle battery unit. Targeting megasites. There is a bipartisan agreement that for North Carolina to keep its winning streak of major economic development projects, it needs more large tracts ready for development as well as megasites. Notable recent recruits show the importance of ready, available sites within easy driving distance of cities and suburbs. Apple Incorporated's future billion-dollar campus at Research Triangle Park will occupy 280 acres, while the Raleigh exurb of Chatham County will soon be home to a $4 billion, 2,000-acre electric vehicle plant, VinFast, and a $1.3 billion semiconductor manufacturer, Wolfspeed Incorporated. State Senate President Pro Tem Phil Berger, Republican Rockingham, says that his top two priorities in economic development are developing megasites to bring in large companies and eventually lowering individual income tax rates beyond the 3.99% floor scheduled to take effect in 2027. The current rate is 4.75%, part of a gradual decrease from 6% to 7.75% that started a decade ago. Berger wants to reduce rates to 2.5%, but did not specify a timeline for doing so. We went for a long time with a lot of megasites out there that were available for companies, he says, referring to immediate needs. We funded this past session money to look at where we stand as far as available sites for development. We need to do more in that regard. A lot of the water and sewer infrastructure money that is available needs to be deployed with a full recognition of the needs for economic development. Responsibility for exploring potential megasites and working with the General Assembly on next steps falls to the Public-Private Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina, or EDPNC. The Raleigh-based nonprofit that works with the State Commerce Department on development and recruiting. EDPNC hired real estate firm JLL last year to help scout prospective sites. They're targeting 5 to 6 more development-ready sites, but many steps remain, from narrowing the list to honing cost estimates and then determining how soon and how much state funding will be available. JLL represented Toyota and VinFast in their respective negotiations with North Carolina, a factor that will help the state gain insight into what sites work best, says EDPNC CEO Christopher Chung. Looking at 2023, Chung says, "One gauge for us is always how large is the pipeline of project activity. That stayed strong. We're not quite at the high watermark, but it's still a very strong pipeline." The pipeline, projects under discussion for North Carolina, represents a combined 95,000 jobs, $112 billion in capital investment, and 224 active projects. The top three industries in that group are automotive and electric vehicles, food and beverage, and chemicals, plastics, and rubber. You're not going to win them all, of course, Chung says, but that's a good sign. Office demand drops. The biggest change has come in office projects, a direct result of the pandemic. Pre-COVID, 30% of prospects would be candidates for office-based work, leaning more urban than rural. Chung says that activity has declined to 5% because of telecommuting, hybrid work, and uncertainty about the future of commercial real estate. Adds Vintner, "The office market is concerning because so many companies are consolidating space. In some cases, office space is going to be reused, but that is still a difficult thing to pull off, and it takes time." Economists say that two of the dominant sectors in the state's two largest metros, finance in Charlotte and tech in Raleigh, are facing cuts and could have some impact here. Since November, Alphabet Incorporated, Google, Amazon.com Incorporated, Meta Platforms Incorporated, Facebook, and Microsoft Corporation have disclosed plans to eliminate 10,000 or more jobs. Financial services companies, too, have laid off employees. Vintner, among others, says the types of banking jobs in North Carolina are less susceptible to the cuts now being made. Berger, the Duke economist, says that the ruptures within tech may delay some of the expansion in the Triangle, but the comparable affordability with Silicon Valley, Austin, Texas, and Miami should help retain investment and interest. Berger adds that the East Coast presence afforded by Raleigh also is attractive to tech firms. Both pointed to companies wanting to grow in North Carolina because of available workers, the universities, a lower cost of living, and yes, population gains. Those factors led economists at the Kenan Institute of Private Enterprise at UNC Chapel Hill's Kenan Flagler Business School to include Charlotte and Raleigh among 30 U.S. metro areas projected to increase their GDP this year amid an expected downturn. Raleigh's gross domestic product, the total value of goods and services produced, is expected to grow by 1.6%. Fourth highest in the projections. San Francisco is number one with a forecast of 3% growth. Charlotte is 12th at 0.8%. In each metro area, Raleigh and Charlotte, the slowdown is evident when comparing growth forecasts for this year with 2022. Raleigh grew by 3.8%, while Charlotte was up by 2.9%. Greensboro's metro area, the Triad, is predicted to suffer a contraction of 0.9% after growing by 0.4% in 2022. Overall, we think the state will do well because of its underlying dynamics, because of the strong migration into the state, but it's definitely slowing, says Gerald Cohen, the Kenan Institute's chief economist. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Investments start flowing. A recent ranking of the largest office sales in the United States for 2022 underscored how major dollars are flowing to the Triangle. The sale of downtown Raleigh's Block 83 building for $330 million ranked 23rd in the nation, according to a report released by Commercial Cafe. Heritage Property sold the building to City Office REIT, based in Vancouver, Canada. The sale was also the largest single real estate transaction in downtown Raleigh's history. Two other sales in the Triangle made the top 50. Number 30 was the sale of Park Point, a revitalized office campus and research park, for $288 million in September. Miami's Starwood Capital Group sold to New York's CBRE Investment Management. And number 42 was the sale of RTP Innovation Center for $213 million in November. Syngenta developed the 336,000-square-foot center in 2017 and sold it to Blue Owl Capital. This all marks a change since the pandemic. Back in 2019, the only office space sale in North Carolina in the top 50 was Highwoods Properties' $436 million purchase of the Bank of America Tower in Charlotte, which ranked number 27. And in 2018, there were no North Carolina sales on the list. The Commercial Cafe report also details the decline of such deals in New York City. In 2018, six of the top 10 sales were in New York. And in 2019, four of the top 10 were in that city. But in 2022, only one sale in the Big Apple cracked the top 10. Renowned Triangle Chef honored by NCRLA. For the fifth year in a row, the North Carolina Restaurant and Lodging Association has selected a Triangle restaurateur for its top honor. Scott Crawford of Crawford Hospitality has been named as 2023 Restaurateur of the Year by the statewide industry organization. The Raleigh chef currently owns and operates three local restaurants, Crawford and Sons and Jolie in downtown Raleigh, and Crawford Cookshop in Clayton. 2023 is set up to be a busy year for Crawford as three new concepts are in the works. New site lead for vaccine developer. A global vaccine developer and manufacturer has a new site lead for its Holly Springs facility. CSL Sequeiros, that's spelled S-E-Q-I-R-U-S, has appointed Jonathan Kegerize as vice president of manufacturing, where he will lead a team of more than 950 employees. CSL Sequeiros uses the facility to manufacture cell-based influenza vaccines. The company, part of Australian-based CSL Limited, also operates manufacturing sites in the United Kingdom and Australia. Last year, CSL Sequeiros wrapped up a four-year, $156 million expansion of its Holly Springs facility. The company initially built the facility through a 2009 partnership with the federal government focused on pandemic preparedness. Former site lead Dave Segal, who joined CSL Sequeiros in early 2022 and has moved to a global engineering role. MLS club sees sharp rise in value. Charlotte's Major League Soccer club has already nearly doubled its value, according to Forbes magazine. According to Forbes, Charlotte FC ranks 10th among 28 MLS teams worth an estimated $625 million. David Tepper, who also owns the Carolina Panthers, paid $325 million for the expansion soccer team in 2019. Out with tacos and in with tacos. A short-lived taco concept by a local restaurant group has been replaced by another taco concept. Chubby's Tacos, with two restaurants in the Triangle, opened a third location in Raleigh last summer under the name Chubby's Taco Stand. But the small space located in the Sutton Square Shopping Center in North Raleigh has already closed. In its place, a new restaurant by the name of Street Tacos Cantina has emerged. The spot is a totally new concept under different owners, despite its similar taco focus. The new restaurant opened in January and serves authentic street tacos, quesadillas, birria ramen, burritos, and loaded fries. And finally, new businesses, layoffs rise. The spread of mass layoffs in recent months is being offset by a boom in new business startups, at least in North Carolina. After 2022 nearly topped the record year of 2021 for new business filings in the state, this year is off to a blistering pace. New numbers from the North Carolina Secretary of State show a record 15,959 filings were received in January, up 6% from a year ago and 14% above 2021's figure. The final tally for new business creations filed with the Secretary of State's Business Registration Division in calendar year 2022 came to 171,400, just shy of 2021's record of 178,300. creation filings. New business creations in the state have charted more than 70% growth since 2019. While we saw slight moderation from 2021's record-setting new business creations in 2022, filings outpaced every other year by a wide margin, Secretary of State Elaine Marshall says. It's also great news for North Carolina's economy that we're ringing in 2023 with record-breaking business creations that show just how enduring our state's entrepreneurial spirit is. And now we turn to some of the major news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. Downtown South eyes construction start date. This is written by Kaylee Thompson. Construction is set to begin on the $2 billion Downtown South development in Raleigh. The long-awaited 140-acre mixed-use entertainment district being developed by Kane Realty Corporation and North Carolina Football Club owner Steve Malik is scheduled to break ground this spring. Kane Realty Director of Design Josie Reeves says the company will begin infrastructure work and break ground on the first mixed-use residential project located off South Saunders Street by Interstate 40. Residents should be able to move in by early 2025, and retail occupants will follow shortly after. In addition, work on adapting the warehouses and the AEG-leased music venue will begin a few months after the residential project begins construction. Reeve says the adaptive reuse warehouses are 60% leased. There will be a warehouse and flex office space in the back, while experiential retail will be on the end caps facing Waterworks Street. Kane Realty has signed an unnamed office tenant for part of the warehouses and will begin work on outfitting the space. A mixed-use office project, the central office, which will be across the street from the residential project, is in the final drawing and permitting stages. Reeve says construction will most likely begin after the warehouse construction starts. The central office is in the heart of Downtown South Entertainment District and will be a six-story building totaling 200,904 square feet. The building would also be the first mass timber building developed in Raleigh, according to Kane Realty. There will be ground floor retail and dining space that will total 15,293 square feet. It will have a walk-through lobby, a terraced garden walking path, and outdoor eating and gathering spaces. There will be multiple outdoor terraces on every floor, a bicycle lobby with showers and changing rooms, and common conference rooms. Our next story is written by Zach Ezone. Medicago to shut down operations in RTP. Shareholder decides to close company after vaccine demand drops. A few months after laying off dozens of employees at its manufacturing facility in Research Triangle Park, Canadian vaccine developer Medicago is ceasing operations. The Mitsubishi Chemical Group, the sole shareholder of Medicago, has determined it will not make further investments in the biopharmaceutical company, which based its U.S. operations in RTP. The Triangle facility, which employed 180 workers, played a key role in producing a plant-based COVID-19 vaccine that failed to gain widespread regulatory approval. Medicago began preparing for commercial production of its vaccine, Covafens, after obtaining regulatory approval in Canada early last year. However, quote, significant changes to the COVID-19 vaccine landscape, unquote, led the Mitsubishi Chemical Group to decide against pursuing commercialization of Covafens. This came after, quote, a comprehensive review of the current global demand and market environment for COVID-19 vaccines, the group says in a statement. The group also says Medicago faced challenges in transitioning to commercial scale production. Demand for COVID-19 vaccines has fallen dramatically in the United States, leaving many states with large vaccine stockpiles. Rather than solely shut down its Covafens efforts, Mitsubishi Chemical Group judged that it was not viable to continue investing in Medicago and instead decided to cease operations at the biopharma company. The group says it will proceed with an orderly windup of Medicago's business and operations in Canada and in the U.S. A spokesperson for Mitsubishi Chemical Group says all employees at the Durham facility will be terminated. As for the group's plans for the facility, the spokesperson says that appropriate arrangements will be considered in the winding up process. Medicago in October informed the North Carolina Department of Commerce of layoffs affecting 62 employees in RTP. This included 60 employees who worked in various roles at the company's facility, as well as two remote employees. In its notice to NC Commerce, Metacargo said the layoffs were the result of the company restructuring its workforce to align with its changing business needs. The restructuring followed Canadian regulators approving Covifens in February 22. The country's government committed to purchasing 20 million doses of the vaccine, with an option to purchase 56 million more, the majority of which would be produced in Durham. But no other country followed suit. Various national media outlets reported that the World Health Organization would not review the vaccine because of Medicago's connection to Philip Morris. The tobacco giant was a minority shareholder in the biotech before divesting all of its shares late last year. Global freight company targets Durham. DHL Global Forwarding opens a new warehouse at 110 Roche Drive. This is written by Lauren Onasorge. A global freight company is betting millions on pharmaceutical growth in the Triangle. DHL Global Forwarding, a division of the Deutsche Post DHL Group, is opening a new warehouse facility in Durham to enable storage and handling of temperature-controlled products. The division is a global air and ocean freight forwarder. Jose Maria de Ordunas, DHL Global Vice President for the U.S. East Region, calls it a bold move, a strategic $8 million investment that creates something that does not exist in the Southeast. DHL picked the Triangle due to its growing status in the life sciences arena. Its proximity to ports from Wilmington to Norfolk, Virginia, is another boon to the location. For customers, the temperature control is the differentiator. We have the ability to receive product at the temperature that is required, so there is not a loss of temperature, Ordunas says. Processing a large amount of freight without any temperature changes is pretty unique, he says. The facility has a cooler capable of storing more than 250,000 pallets, described as the largest cooling unit for pharma in the Southeast. Of the 40,000 square foot space at 110 Roche Drive, 20,000 square feet is between 15 and 25 degrees Celsius, and 18,000 square feet is between 2 and 8 degrees Celsius. Temperature control is often vital in pharmaceutical products, from vaccines to new drug candidates. The pandemic, with the temperature needs of some early COVID-19 vaccines, only highlighted the need. Pre-pandemic, DHL was envisioning a smaller building, but the growth of the pharma industry, coupled with the supply chain issues, had the company revising its plan. We decided to go bigger and make a significant investment, Ordunas says. Already we're seeing some good acceptance with our customers, he says. DHL offers more than just space. It also offers an online platform where customers can manage their shipments in real time and even track the carbon footprint. The facility's grand opening was February 7. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Tech and Aviation page written by Lauren Onasorge. Durham startup acquired by another mom-led firm. A Durham startup has been acquired in a deal that founder Brooke Markovicius says will keep Allobee's mission going to help women find flexible work. Markovicius hadn't initially intended to sell her five-person company, which built a platform for moms looking for freelance projects. It was 2022, and she was fundraising. Securities filings show Allobee had embarked on a $3 million round, closing on $101,000 of that sum in May. But the market tightened, investors started to pull back, and it became clear that Allobee wouldn't be able to close the deal. So we started to look at alternative options of what we could still do, Markovicius says. I started reaching out to my network. That network included Amy Nelson, founder of The Riveter in Seattle, initially a network of community and co-working spaces that launched in Seattle in 2017. While Markovicius was in Seattle years ago, she had watched Nelson start The Riveter from scratch, having been one of its original members. It was one of Allobee's early inspirations, she says. Nelson, like Markovicius, is a mom, and their missions aligned, so much so that they stayed in touch when Markovicius moved her company to Durham. I really admired that even during the pandemic, when they had to shut down their co-working space and pivot the company, she kept it alive, Markovicius says. It took resiliency, the kind of resiliency she sought. Markovicius was looking for a company that could support Alibi's mission of getting women paid for flexible work, so she sent an email. Discussions ensued, and the deal closed. It was the best scenario all around for us, she says. Garner tech firm bought out by Irish company. A longtime Garner tech company has been acquired by an Irish firm in a deal the CEO says could mean more jobs. Enstar Global Services has been bought by Westerworld Global of Dublin. The plan is to leverage their strengths to become the leading asset lifecycle management and workforce solutions partner to high-tech industries, primarily semiconductors. Daryl McDaniel, Enstar's president and CEO, says he and Westerworld CEO Nigel Wendin started talking about a deal in July. The more we learned about each other's companies, the more it did make sense, he says. The firm targets the semiconductor industry, which is in the midst of a growth spike. McDaniel says the opportunity prompted Enstar to explore multiple options and multiple potential acquirers. There are three options. You can acquire, get acquired, or merge, McDaniel says, and we were looking at different options. The firm teamed up with HiRock Partners to evaluate options. It quickly narrowed the field to Westerworld. Financial terms were not released, but McDaniel says he is very pleased with the outcome. With Enstar's 280 employees, the combined firm will have about 800 workers, and no layoffs are expected. McDaniel says, instead he says, there will be opportunities. We're going to need to add people, he says. Houston, Las Vegas, and New York State, among new flights out of RDU. Flying to the state of New York? Not a problem. Frontier Airlines is bringing back several flights to its Raleigh-Durham International Airport lineup in 2023, and a third are to New York, Islip, Buffalo, and Syracuse. The airline recently added flights to its schedule for April out of RDU, including Cincinnati, Cleveland, Detroit, Indianapolis, Portland, Maine, and Trenton, New Jersey, as well as the New York flights. Southwest Airlines has also added nonstops to Houston and Las Vegas, where it will compete with existing service from Delta and Frontier. The new Southwest flights are set to debut in April. And finally, RDU looking to add terminal space. Airport is back in growth mode after tough years with pandemic. Long lines, traffic congestion, and crowded ticket counters are becoming more common during peak hours at Raleigh-Durham International Airport. As more flyers return to RDU, the fear is that passenger volume will outgrow the existing terminal space and quickly. Revamping the airport for the decades ahead is a big task, so big that during a strategy meeting February 3rd for the Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority, it was announced that longtime Chief Operating Officer Bill Sandifer has moved into the new role of Chief Development Officer to focus solely on the strategic plan. John Connell, previously Senior Vice President of Operations and Asset Management for RDU, is taking on the COO position. Big picture, we have got to get into construction on this building as fast as we can. I feel the pressure, Sandifer said about expanding Terminal 2. He said that to move the terminal from 36 gates to 53 gates, Terminal 2 needs to expand from its current 462,000 square feet to 870,000 square feet, and not growing isn't a feasible option if the airport wants to keep its carriers, Sandifer told the board. Sandifer said RDU is projected to serve nearly 14.7 million passengers this year, which would top the record of 14.2 million in 2019. In 2022, the airport reported serving 11.8 million passengers, up 35% from 2021. The terminals are designed to serve 16.5 million passengers. Airport projections have the passenger count eclipsing that in 2026. If RDU cut the growth rate that it saw between 2014 and 2019 in half, it would still exceed 38 million passengers in 2050, Sandifer said. But funding for expansions as well as maintaining current infrastructure is a problem. The challenging part is, how are you going to pay for it? Sandifer said. And now we turn to the On Greater Triangle Growth page, written by Evan Hoopfer. New community in the works at Farrington. Homes in Granville subdivision to start at around $750,000. A new subdivision is being planned in one of the Greater Triangle's most well-known neighborhoods. The Granville subdivision within Farrington Village would be located at the south end of the village, according to plans submitted to the county. Farrington Village sits along U.S. Highway 15501 between Chapel Hill and Pittsboro. If the project is approved by Chatham County Commissioners, plans for Granville call for 43 lots across 51.8 acres. Lot sizes will average about two-thirds of an acre, and home sizes will range from 2,100 to 3,400 square feet, says Greg Fitch, vice president at Fitch Creations Incorporated. He says the projected home price is $750,000 and up, not including the home site. The home site prices will depend on market conditions at the time of development. Fitch says there is no rush in developing Granville, as there are still multiple neighborhoods approved within the original plans for Farrington. Part of the decision-making depends on what the market wants in terms of home size and amenities, Fitch says. It's good to be able to pivot depending on the economy and buyer preferences. We plan to build Granville in three phases, so the build-out will be controlled and manageable, too. Chatham County has long been home to executive-style housing, and there are several pricier housing options coming online. For example, the Summit community just south of Farrington features homes that average about $3 million a sale. Developer wins approval for new apartments near Walmart in Greenville. After the Greenville City Council rejected plans last year for a new apartment complex, the development team tweaked its plans and resubmitted them, this time winning approval from the council. A development team led by Bill Clark Homes, which has offices in Greenville and Wilmington, won approval recently to rezone 29.5 acres along L.T. Hardy Road behind the Walmart on East 10th Street to allow for development of an apartment complex with up to 200 units. The Granville City Council voted 4-2 January 12 to approve the rezoning, with council members Monica Daniels and Marion Blackburn dissenting. And finally, nearly 400 new homes planned in Sanford. Plans are coming together for a new housing community in a prominent area of Sanford. An LLC addressed to Greenhawk Corporation based in Raleigh purchased 113.8 acres for just over $6.2 million, according to two deeds filed January 27. The land sits next to the former Morelli manufacturing plant off Nash Street, southeast of downtown. Greenhawk is planning a housing development that will include around 388 new residential units, says Jeremy Medlin, executive vice president of real estate for the company. We've been after the right location in Sanford for several years and believe we found the right one that fits us best for now, he says. And now we turn to the page written by Kaylee Thompson on real estate. Florida firm plans apartment project complex would rise near the old Durham Athletic Park. A project with retail space and hundreds of apartments is moving forward across from the historic Durham Athletic Park. Ram Realty, a Florida real estate developer, has received site plan approval from the city of Durham for its Washington Street mixed-use project. The development will have 310 multifamily units and 7,791 square feet of retail space. The apartments and retail space will be in two buildings connected by a pedestrian bridge. The apartments will be a mix of studio, one, two, and three-bedroom units. The cost and timeline for the project were unavailable, as Ram Realty declined to comment. Last year, the project faced opposition due to concerns that its design could lead to at least one business closing its doors. The main issue was a planned retaining wall that neighbors the Durham Distillery. Owner Melissa Katrinchik said it would make it impossible for trucks to access their loading dock. The approved site plans show a retaining wall near Katrinchik's property that would be demolished to the property line. The development will be on four parcels, 501, 701, and 703 Washington Street, and 705, 707 West Trinity Avenue, totaling 5.24 acres. Ram Realty owns both the Trinity Avenue properties, while Irwin Oil Company owns 701-703 Washington. An LLC addressed to the Magnolia Companies owns 501 Washington. The total assessed value for the four properties is around $5.77 million. The site currently holds an office building and storage warehouses. Site plans show that all but one single-story building will be demolished to make way for the development. The building that will remain is the office building on 501 Washington Street. Another concern was potential removal of a historic coal trestle. The site plans show that the company will remove it if it's possible. If so, the materials will be salvaged and repurposed as an amenity feature in the development. New homes starting in the 300,000s. A Kentucky home builder has started construction on dozens of new homes starting in the mid-300,000s in northeastern Wake County. Drees Homes is bringing 78 single homes and 59 townhomes to Rollsville in a community named Meadow at Jones Dairy. The single-family homes will start in the mid-400,000s and the townhomes will start in the mid-300,000s, much lower than the median home price in Rollsville, which was around $577,000 in November, according to Redfin. Trees Homes Division President Jerry Dean says the single-family homes will have at least four bedrooms, with some plans offering up to six bedrooms. The townhomes will be two stories and have three bedrooms. Dean says the company doesn't have a total project cost at this time. The company will start selling the homes in late March, with the first home scheduled for completion in October. And finally, on this page, DHIC building affordable apartments. A Raleigh developer recently closed on a loan that is the majority of its financing for an affordable housing project in Apex. DHIC acquired a $35 million tax-exempt loan to finance the construction of Broadstone Walk, a 164-unit apartment community. All of the units will rent for between 40 to 70% of the area's median income. Broadstone Walk is at 950 South Hughes Street off the Apex Peakway and across from a Walmart. The community will have eight three-story buildings with a mix of one-, two-, and three-bedroom units. The breakdown of the units for AMI will be 74 units at 70%, 30 at 60%, 40 at 50%, and 20 at 40%. And now we turn to the On Healthcare and Higher Ed page written by Zachy Zone. NCSU Business School may be on the move. NC State says current Poole College home is no longer adequate. NC State University is looking into relocating its business school to Centennial Campus in what would likely be a costly endeavor, or that could take up to a decade. The university is in the process of hiring an architect to study potential sites where NC State could build a new facility on Centennial to house the Poole College of Management. This initial study is the first step of a long process that could end with the university turning to state lawmakers and private donors for funds to build a new facility. The college has been housed in Nelson Hall, facing Hillsborough Street, since it was established in the early 1990s. The university has remodeled the building, which was constructed in 1938 to house its School of Textiles, over the years to make it more suitable for a business school. Despite this work, Nelson Hall doesn't quite meet the needs of a modern business school, says Richard Warr, the college's associate dean for faculty and research. It's a building that doesn't meet our needs currently or really going forward in terms of what we're trying to deliver, he says. The building isn't large enough as the college has grown in terms of students and faculty over the years, Warr says. There are about 3,500 undergraduate and 900 graduate students enrolled at the college, which has the equivalent of about 170 faculty members and 77 employees on staff. To meet its needs, the college leases space outside of Nelson Hall for programs that could all be consolidated in one facility. For instance, the college leases space across the street on Brooks Avenue for its MBA program. But more so than simply lacking square feet, the building doesn't have the right kind of space, Warr says. The facility lacks the flexible space that allows students to meet and work together on projects or hold a teleconference with a partner company. A new building could also provide students with communal spaces and the college with more room to hold events. Our space here at Nelson Hall is okay, Warr says, but it's about creating the right kind of space for our students. The college is evaluating potential sites on Centennial campus that could house the new facility, as there isn't a large amount of development space on the university's main campus. Additionally, the location works for students involved in science and engineering programs based at Centennial, but who also take courses through Poole College of Management. Science 37 makes acquisition in wake of layoffs. Challenging quarter. A clinical trials company headquartered in Research Triangle Park has made an acquisition as it deals with a struggling stock price and recent layoffs. Science 37 has acquired the life sciences platform of Vault Health, a company involved in remote health diagnostics and COVID testing. The deal is intended to accelerate Science 37's existing development plans and help drive operational efficiencies for the company, which deals in technology for clinical trials. The acquisition will enable Science 37 to save costs from planned spending. The company didn't disclose the financial terms of the acquisition, but the deal will be cash flow neutral for the company within a year, according to a statement on February 2nd. Science 37 has offerings intended to improve clinical trial access for patients, such as a decentralized clinical trial operating system and its virtual site called MetaSite that allows patients and providers to access trials from any location. This recent acquisition is intended to improve the company's MetaSite capabilities. In November, Science 37 announced plans to lay off 90 employees as part of a cost reduction program intended to save the company $21 million in gross cash annually. The company implemented the measures after a quarter that Chief Financial Officer Mike Zaranek described as challenging during an earnings call in November. And finally, decision moves Liquidia closer to drug launch. Morrisville's Liquidia scored a win in its battle as the Patent Trial and Appeal Board has rejected a request from United Therapeutics for a rehearing after the board last year found all claims in a patent owned by United to be unpatentable. The decision moves Liquidia closer to obtaining full regulatory approval of its lead product. In 2020, United sued Liquidia for patent infringement in U.S. District Court. In August, a judge ruled Liquidia would infringe one of two patents if the company began marketing Yutrepia, intended to treat pulmonary arterial hypertension. But Liquidia challenged United's patents, and the board ruled in July that the patent the judge found Liquidia to have infringed is invalid. And now we turn to the On Retail and Restaurants page, written by Laura Bromette. Harris Teeter will anchor Apex Project. Sweetwater Town Center is rising along Highway 64. Harris Teeter has signed on to open in Sweetwater Town Center in Apex. The development is currently underway along Highway 64 west of town in an area that continues to attract new residents and commercial development. The Matthews-based grocer will fill a 64,000-square-foot space in the development's second phase. Its first phase, currently under construction, includes 230 apartments, an event concert lawn, parking decks, and 67,000 square feet of commercial space. The project is a joint venture between the Calico Group and Experience One Homes and is situated on more than 40 acres at 2775 Core Bank Street, south of US 64 and west of Interstate 540. The first phase of the development is expected to deliver at the end of this year, according to Preston Waldo of Retail Strategies of NC. That phase, dubbed the East Side, has 7 signed leases. Tenants include Duke Health, taking up 13,500 square feet, Club Pilates, Restore Hyper Wellness, Southern Peak Brewery, Fratellis Deli, Sushi Yaki, and Royal Nail Spa and Lounge. The second phase, or the West Side, is slated to deliver in late 2024. It will feature the Harris Teeter and 11,200 square feet of retail space, along with 3 out parcels. 2 of the out parcels have ground leases pending with the national tenants, Waldo says. Harris Teeter will also open a gas station along with the store. The demand has been overwhelming, Waldo says about potential tenants. Downtown Raleigh taco spot closes. Soul Taco, a Latin American and Southern fusion restaurant in Raleigh, has closed. The restaurant opened last July at 927 West Morgan Street, but closed at the end of December. The ground floor space measures just under 3,000 square feet and is fully equipped for a restaurant. Soul Taco was started by business owners Trey Owens, Ari Augenbaum, and Nar Hovnanian in Richmond, Virginia in 2018. The team originally planned to bring two concepts to Raleigh, both housed in the same building. The larger half of the space was set to open as Jufro. That side of the restaurant never opened. The team had two Soul Taco locations in Richmond, but switched one of the locations to a new concept, Sear Burger, in January. The Raleigh location was the team's first venture outside of Virginia. The property's rent is listed as $21 per square foot plus utilities. Raleigh chef to open first spot in Durham. A James Beard-nominated chef at a downtown Raleigh restaurant is venturing into Durham to open his first restaurant. The new spot, called Little Bull, will be located in downtown Durham. Chef Oscar Diaz, executive chef at Cortez Seafood and Cocktail, is behind the new restaurant. Diaz is planning to serve his version of elevated comfort food with a seasonally rotating menu. Little Bull will also serve cocktails and a late-night menu on weekends. The spot is set to open in March. The space is currently being renovated at 810 North Mangum Street, formerly Jet Plane Coffee. In our final minutes, we'll read as much as we can from the news around the state. Pipeline strong for Charlotte's core areas. New report details project plan for the key uptown market. This is written by Eric Spanberg, who's with the Charlotte Business Journal. Charlotte's development pipeline in the urban core sits at $6.9 billion worth of projects in 2023, up nearly $3 billion from last year, according to the newly published State of the Center City report by Charlotte Center City Partners. Those figures account for office, multifamily, and commercial development in Uptown and South End. Upcoming projects include 7.2 million square feet of office space with 1.9 million square feet under construction and another 5.3 million square feet announced, 608,000 square feet of retail with 62,000 square feet under construction and 546,000 square feet announced, 7,700 apartment units with 2,600 under construction and 5,100 announced, and 2,010 hotel rooms with 670 under construction and 1,340 more announced. And we'll go ahead and stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.